Mahaprabhu, when speaking with Ramananda Roy about the goal of life, put some questions before Ramananda Roy. And Ramananda Roy was, in Mahaprabhu's opinion, the most expert person to answer his questions about the ultimate goals of life. So it's a simple question and answer, about 10 questions or less. We'll see. About 10 questions. Very simple. Mahaprabhu says, what is the essence of learning in the field of educational activities? Ramananda Roy replies, there is no superior quality of learning other than the knowledge pursued in regard to devotional service to Krishna. That is the answer, the goal in that. You may learn so many things. Like, I know so many things. We all know so many things. But in the end, if you don't know how to perform devotional activities to Krishna, you are considered ignorant. And you don't know anything. Ignorant fools. Who doesn't know about devotion, who doesn't know how to perform devotion, ultimately is still ignorant. Because devotion, and he begins with devotion, devotional service is at the top of the goals in this human form of life. How to serve God. But what is God? How to serve Him? All these things, all this knowledge, this leads to perfection. Let us say you went to school back in the 60s and you learned COBOL programming for computers. Well, you can't get a job with that today. That's a has-been education. It's ineffective. There are many things in this country where, or in any country, you learn them. Society, times move on. The thing you learn has no application. There are many people. Vishnu Maharaj, he went to school to become a nuclear physicist, and he set his goals at the top realm of nuclear physics. When he, over three quarters of the way completed, got his master's and was moving in certain direction, he went out to get a job and found he couldn't get a job anywhere. And they just told him, you're overeducated. Wherever you stop, we know you won't be here long, because you're educated at the top level. And we just want people who are going to work at this level. And for a year and a half, he couldn't get a job. Overeducated, you see. So, he hit the road. Went to California. Let Maharaj tell you the whole story some other time. But there are many examples, but you know how to serve Krishna. And you know the various arts of serving Krishna. They've not become outdated yet. In fact, we're learning them from books that are thousands of years old. 500 years old, Chaitanya Charitamrita. 5,000 years old, Srimad Bhagavatam. They're not outdated. The mundane education is not real education, and it becomes outdated. Some children learn history, and after a while there's a social revolution, they burn all those history books and write some new ones. Who knows what happened in the past? Especially when you go into the Incas and the Mayas and all sorts of things. How do they know what happened? They were just there, that's all they know. And after that, it's all speculative. I mean, there was a period of time where people followed Darwin's theory in, like a religion, in education. Now people are burning those books. But our parents, the older devotees here, their parents, they grew up on the bottle of Darwinianism. And now it's being trashed. And give it another 50 years and it'd be the butt of jokes. It's on the way out. And that means they just learned a lie for 150 years. You see. So in Krishna consciousness, we learn how to serve Krishna. What is Krishna? What is God? All these things. That is real knowledge. It doesn't get disproved a decade or two, a century or two later. In the middle of our life, it all gets disproved. It hasn't happened yet. Ever. We may refine a particular understanding. There may be differences of opinions over subtle spiritual points. But as it is said, we all agree that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the differences are very, very minor. But in the field of material learning, sometimes the difference is so great that the textbooks and everything are just burned after that because it is useless. So then he says,
Mahaprabhu says, what is the highest fame? Ramananda Roy says, the highest fame of a living entity is the reputation of being a devotee of Krishna. You might be part of a great political party in this country. You might be, you know, from the Navy SEAL team. You might be, you know, the bodyguard of the president. You might be Billy Gates. But when you go up into the heavenly planets, people go, who's Billy Gates? What's a seal? Well, that's one of the lower species. You see? But if you go all the way to Brahma Loka and present yourself, well, I am a humble devotee of Krishna. Oh, a devotee of Krishna, very rare. And we welcome you to come here. We'll be very happy to receive you here. The highest reputation is being a devotee of Krishna. Of course, in the lower world, people may say, well, what is Krishna? Who is Krishna? Then your preaching opportunity begins. The highest, what is the most valuable possession of life among all the assets of the world? Ramananda Roy replies, one who has transcendental love for Radha and Krishna is to be considered the richest person in the world. We used to do collection in New York and other places on the street, and we would say, sir, could you help out? We're helping the poor. We're helping the poor. Could you chip in something today? They would give us 50 cents or a dollar. We'd say, thank you. Take this magazine and read all about it. So one moralist in our movement, who's the temple president at that time, he complained, no, this is a lie. Why are you telling them? And I made a reference to this point, and I said, the only rich person who has love of Krishna. They never even heard about Krishna. I don't care if they're multimillionaires. They're dirt poor in the estimation of the absolute truth. They have no love for Krishna. They don't know what is God. They're dirt poor, regardless of how much money. So the poor person we're helping was the person we were talking to. To engage them in Krishna's service, take this, sir, and read all about it. Go back to that in the magazine. So that was the word jugglery of the Sankirtan devotees. But it wasn't just a trick of words. It was true. Mahaprabhu says, Ramananda Roy says, who has no love of Krishna is a poor man. Who has love of Krishna is the richest person in the world. Question, what is the most grievous type of sorrow among all sorrows and distress of life? What's the worst type of sorrow and distress? Huh? There are so many distresses in this world, particularly when we lose a loved one or a relation with a loved one. Of course, some people suicide over money losses. The greatest loss is the loss of money. Some people suicide over name and fame. They lose their fame, their status quo. The pain, the sorrow even drives them in that direction, you see. Ramananda Roy says, there is no greater sorrow, there is no greater pain than the unhappiness created by separation from devotees of Krishna. Now, some people might say, well, that's a flowery thing to say. And that's all that it is. But then we would argue and say, no, actually not. The history of the world has shown that people will resort and they will show us many symptoms of heartbreak and sorrow. But this separation, viparlumba, this has shown, and Mahaprabhu showed, the greatest feelings of viparlumba. We have not seen two lovers in separation sweat blood from their forehead. It is mentioned in the scriptures that there are such feelings of separation between loved ones. We have not seen it here. That in the feelings of sadness from separation, that they sweated blood. Mahaprabhu used to sweat blood out of the pores of his forehead. So intense was his feelings of separation. We have seen people fall down in a faint at the loss of a loved one, or the loss of money, or the prospect of their fame as now they have been publicly disgraced. But we have not seen them fall down and the joints in their bones become dislocated and stretched out by 6 inches. And their body increase in size by another 30% its normal size. We have not seen such feelings of separation. Such feelings are mentioned in scriptures, and Mahaprabhu showed them. Those are Mahabhav. So, not simply flowery words. Oh, that's a flowery statement. The greatest suffering is absence from devotees. No, it is a real statement. And there are many devotees in the world who somehow or another, they get separated from the other devotees. Maybe it's their bad karma for the time, or Krishna's teaching them a lesson, or maybe they just made a wrong choice on their own. But they get way out there, way away from devotees, and everything else comes to them. Money, a home, happy, you know, all the external things come to them, and in the end, they're crying for the association of devotees. It may not just happen immediately, but many, many examples are there. Many, many examples are there. So it is not just a flowery statement. It is backed up by practical experience. Who is the most perfectly liberated among all liberated souls in the universe? Answer. One who has transcendental love for Sri Krishna is the greatest of all liberated souls. Question. What is the best song that a person can sing? Answer. The essence of all songs is the singing of the transcendental glories of Radha and Krishna. Top of the pops. What is the highest benefit of life that a person can seek? Answer. There is no greater gain in life than the association of devotees engaged in the service of Krishna. Question. Who is to be remembered constantly by all living beings? Answer. One should always think of the transcendental name, fame, and qualities of Sri Krishna. Question. What should the living being meditate on? Answer. The most perfect type of meditation is to meditate upon the lotus feet of Radha and Krishna. Question. Where should the living being reside exclusively, living all other residential quarters? Answer. One should live in Vrindavan, where the transcendental pastimes and Rasa Lila are perpetually performed. But we find that many of Krishna's great devotees did not live in Vrindavan. Some lived in Puri, some lived in Navadvipa, and others had neither the opportunity to live in either place, or even if they had the opportunity to live in those places, they sometimes gave that up, and they went to other places to live, and to create a spiritual atmosphere. So it's obvious. In this world, we can't all move to Vrindavan. In fact, that's half the problem with Vrindavan now. It's swelled at least four times the capacity and population that it's actually built to sustain, especially the infrastructure, water, all the things necessary, plumbing, all the things. It just creates an environmental nightmare. The city is not built. It was a medieval city, and it's filled with modern population and everything that goes along with it. But the meaning is that we should live in a transcendental environment where the Supreme Lord and His devotees are present. We should not go and live in an environment independent of the Supreme Lord. And wherever the deity is worshipped, wherever the devotees chant the holy name, Krishna is present there, and that place is considered to be a holy place. In fact, Krishna says, I'm not in Vrindavan. I'm not in the hearts of the yogis. He mentions one or two other places where he's not, but he says, but I am always present where my pure devotees chant my holy names. So that is the explanation behind this. The best of places to live, Vrindavan. The company of devotees, where devotional service is performed, where the deity is present. Manusamhita says, you should not go to a place and live where there is no temple, where there is no river, where there is no Vaishnava. Yet Srila Prabhupada came here. Of course, this country has many rivers, but it doesn't have many temples, and it didn't have any devotees when he came. So that's the mark of a very, very, very great devotee, Mahabhagava, that he may go to any place, nowhere place, where there are no devotees, no temples, or anything divine, and establish those things. That is very rare thing. It's just like when you're cold, make a fire. So the great devotees, when they find that there are no devotees around them, then they just start making it. They convert them. And then they're very happy in the presence of the devotees. What should the living entity hear about, leaving aside all other topics? Answer. The reciprocal loving pastimes of Radha and Krishna are the only subject matter for oral reception
by the living entity. Question. What is the most worshipful object among all those to be worshipped? Answer. The topmost worshipable object is the combined names of God and Krishna. Even higher than deity worship is your japa. But to become proficient in chanting the holy names in the path of sadhana, worshipping of the deity, is required. It is a process we should learn. It is a process that we must engage in. But the highest worship of the Supreme Lord is the worship of His holy names. The topmost worshipable object is the combined names of Radha and Krishna. Where do persons go who aspire after liberation or sense enjoyment? Two things, liberation and sense enjoyment. In the world, if people want liberation, some people want enjoyment. Where do they go? The first person, answer, the first person attains a body that is immovable like a stone or a mountain. The liberationist, the impersonalist, becomes stones. And the other, those who want material enjoyment, they attain celestial bodies. Enjoyment is found in heaven. So that doesn't mean, though, the enjoyer that goes out and parties and just gets drunk and just runs all over town and just enjoys like an animal, they want to enjoy. So they go to heaven? No, no, they get the body of an animal so they can run around naked and just eat anything and be unregulated and do whatever they like with no responsibility. When it says to cultivate enjoyment, that means that people who do karmakanda, who do many religious activities, pious activities, social welfare and all these things, and helping the poor and helping the animals and all this help people, then they qualify to go to the heavenly planets, and there they enjoy. Cultivation of enjoyment means of a better life under scriptural rule and regulations. They may go to heaven, but those who just break out and do whatever they want in life, that's called the vikarmis. The karmis go to heaven. The devotees go to Vaikuntha or Goloka. And the party animals, they go to hell. And hell is not particularly a place. Hell is anywhere. Hell is here today if you don't have any heat. If you don't have a good house with insulation, that's hell. Hell's not hot. Hell's not cold. Hell is an expressive word. It means all kinds of miserable conditions. Some people are surrounded by wealth, name, fame, and things that you know, we sometimes would just like to have a little of, especially the wealth. But they are in hell. They are in hell. They suffer, and then suicide or something. So much suffering. Hell doesn't mean necessarily poverty. Hell may be rich. Hell may be poor. Mahaprabhu has said, but actually hell is where there are no devotees. No devotees in Krishna. That is the hell. The hell of the hells. The great devotees pray, I will go to hell to serve Krishna, I will go to heaven to serve Krishna. The main point is, I must have service to Krishna. When we went to Hawaii in 1985 and opened a preaching center in Waikiki in Ala Moana Harbor, on the 33rd floor of the Yacht Harbor Towers, overlooking the Pacific Ocean with 9 shades of blue, we got a lot of criticism for that. Someone said we should have opened something out in Anaheim, or someone said we should open something in Harlem or something. But rather, we picked one of the most heavenly planets, places on the planet. And Vishnu Maharaj used to quote that verse. Give me heaven or give me hell, the main thing is service to Krishna. And then he used to say, we've been in hell long enough, so we're going to heaven. And then after a time, we all moved there to Dharmaraj, and all the devotees, we moved to Hawaii. And that became hell. That became the hell. It rained nonstop for 1.5 years, every single day. That which was once heaven became hell. So, so that was the last. That was the last question. The above questions and answers contain the essence of all transcendental knowledge, confirmed by the authoritative scriptures. All right, that's all I wanted to say this morning. Are there any questions? Comments? You're welcome all.
I had one thought.
Yes.
That refers to your earlier part of your discussion. It's a philosophy that comes under many guises and names, which is it's a semi-truth. It says that we're all living entities. We're actually, however minor, all expansions of Godhead. And this is the way by which he enters the world to, you know, exhibit his pastimes, and to he enjoys himself through us, all the living entities, as expansions. So what's wrong with enjoying this plane? This is all, it's all pastime of the Supreme Lord.
Well, we should go back to the Creator and say, you know, you got to redesign this place. It's a catastrophe design. I mean, there's disease everywhere. We're all suffering from arthritis and old age. And like, could you restructure this thing and maybe we could enjoy for you? Enjoyment in this world, we have come here to enjoy for God. If you analyze, from the minute you wake up, it's like, ah, the back, oh, the elbow, oh, my neck. You know, it's like there's just so, it's just a struggle for existence, you know. Why don't you just jump in and hit the cold shower in January? It's just like, ooh, you know, you have to work, you have to do so many things. I mean, the Christians used to say, God put us here to enjoy. And we say, well, he's really a crappy God. Because he doesn't know how to make a good place to enjoy. The place, I mean, the numbers of diseases that there are in the world, and my God, if smallpox comes to this country, as is the major fear in bio, you know, it's biological warfare. If they manage to pull that off, we will see a horror in our life that makes the World Trade Centers look like a Sunday picnic. And that scourge of smallpox has hit the world before in Europe in medieval times. It's been around. I have all us older folks, we got a mark on our arm. It's a big circle. You kids don't have that. Because just shy of, you know, this last century, smallpox was a threat in this country, and everybody got inoculated. They finally drove it out. They finally extincted it. People used to die from it in your grandparents' age and all. Well, it's gone. It's gone to the point you're not vaccinated. We are. And these evildoers want to bring that back as a weapon of mass destruction. If they're successful in that, you know, we will see some horror. And of course, the government's working. They have they announced they have so many millions of vaccination serum, and they're making it like anything right now. They weren't focused. Now they're focused. There's so many diseases in this world. So much. I mean, what type of God is it? He enjoys seeing all these things? Murder, mass destruction? Is that how he... If he enjoys that, then let's get the guns and go out and blur away. See? So that's very faulty. It's one thing to say it. And the hippies used to say, is this organized religion? And we used to say, well, yeah, we have a temple. No, man, I'm not into organized religion. You know, organization's not good. Right? Well, why don't you pass urine out your ear then? Organization's not good. Why don't you stuff your food up your nose? Your whole body is organized. As soon as it gets unorganized, it's a disaster. Disease sets in, and you're dead. We thrive on, once you drive on the left side of the road, you know, like organization. It was just a hippie philosophy that when philosophers like, okay, let's see how you go, you know, let's how this holds up under the you know, let's stretch it to see how much it fits. And it didn't fit. It didn't work. We thrive out of organization. You see, well, you put money in your bank, why don't we just put it in somebody else's account? You'll sue them for that misorganization. We thrive on it. So that was the point. Once I was at a university and an issue came up about abortion. So there's a group of kids standing around me. We're all about the same age then, early 20s. And I was saying, because that was very controversial. Still it is, but it's old news in the ear, so we just forget it. But it was very, very controversial at the time. So, of course, I'm arguing to the point of no, abortion is shouldn't be allowed. It's sinful. It's cruel. It's an act of violence. It's even murder. And then this guy was standing there. He goes, so you believe the souls in all living things, right? And I said, yes. He goes, well, you murder so many oranges. And I said, what? He said, sure. You just spit the seeds in the garbage, right? Oh, I had said they throw the babies in the garbage. And he picked up on that and said, you spit the seeds in the garbage. And I said, yeah, but I think there's a difference between a seed and a baby. And he goes, well, I don't. And I go, I said, so there's no difference between a human baby, human fetus, and an orange seed. And he goes, no. So then I said, so your philosophy is that there's no need to discriminate. Life is just life across the board. He goes, yep. If you can spit an orange seed in the garbage, you can throw a baby, a fetus in the garbage. I said, so then I just started pushing the point. I said, so your logic, your philosophy is there's no need to discriminate. If it's life, it's life. If it's matter, it's matter. Right? He goes, right. I said, if it's matter, it's matter. Right? Right. I said, so go in the cafeteria. I pointed to the canteen on campus. I said, go in there and bring out a sandwich of your choice, which is basically dead matter. And then I said, and then go over there and pick up that dog stool and come over here and eat them both right in front of us and show us that matter's matter and soul's life is life. Show us applicably that you don't have to discriminate between levels of matter or levels of life. You know? And there was like 30 kids just watching this whole like nasty debate, and then this went, everybody just laughed like anything. This guy turned like totally red. It wasn't applicable. And many years later in Washington, D.C., right out in front of the Capitol on the, where we used to sell T-shirts, there was a Rathiatra there. And the devotees came running over to me and they said, Mars is a Christian lady out here. She's really outrageous and she's disturbing everything. So, whatever. So I went out and there was a group. They had their placards, against the devil and all these things, and it was all about us. But they were a little distant. And this lady had come in. It was summertime, and she was wearing a red miniskirt. She was very intelligent, and she was very fired up, and she had her Bible, and she was doing her thing. And a bunch of bhaktas and bhaktins were around her, and she was, like, very practiced at what she was doing. And she kind of captured the scene. So then I got there, and she was making this point. You people are deceptive. You are deceptive. And the point what she was making is... And then they said, well, how are we deceptive? You sometimes wear wigs. You are deceptive. Right? So her point was, because the devotees had shaved heads, they would sometimes wear a wig. But in this country, well, we didn't make the wigs. Everybody wears wigs. Lawyers, doctors, so many people wear wigs because they're ashamed to have a bald head. So devotees used to go out and sell books in the airport, and walking around with a big shaved head used to, like, you'd just be walking out to somebody with a book and the shaved head would push him away like a magnet or something. So they used to wear wigs. They're called wig hats. So she said, that's deceptive. That's deceptive. So I picked up on this point. That's deceptive. And I said, I don't think it's very deceptive. Otherwise, the Supreme Court judge is also deceptive. And many women are also deceptive because the wigs are for sale. There's shops in every big city. New York, you just go in, all they sell is wigs. So are all these people, heads of state, lawyer, are they all deceptive? No, but you're deceptive because the way you are is actually you. So she made her point like that. You follow? That we're deceptive. So then I just said, you're also very deceptive. How am I deceptive? And I said, well, you have those beautifully shaped legs, very smooth. I think it's quite deceptive. Why don't you just show us those big hairy legs that you have? It's a woolly mammoth. Because the fact is, ladies' legs and men's legs are basically the same. There's hair on legs, And she just, everybody laughed, and she just started squeaking like a mouse and broke into tears and ran away. So, be careful using those, lower punches, hitting back bar and will kill you. But that's the fact. It's like, you say we're deceiving. You were deceiving. I said, it was a little elaborate. I said, you're deceiving all the young men here. You're deceiving all the men here. Everybody thinks you have these nice, clean, smooth legs. But the fact is, you have hairy legs. And you're deceiving us. So, I don't care. I mean, whether a person shaves their legs or they don't. That's irrelevant. But in philosophy, what you say has to fit. When we start pulling on it, it should fit all around the rim and not just be one-sided. Then it doesn't, it is not very useful for us. It doesn't hold up. So, you know, you wouldn't attack an older person like that with that kind of logic. They would feel insulted. But young people are a little more, you know, expandable in their issues. And Prabhupada's remark, when the lady asked, why do you shave your head? And he said, better a cool head than cool legs.
She was wearing the miniskirt also. Yeah.
Better a cool head than cool legs. So that's not a right philosophy. You know, God put us here as his expansions to enjoy. When you analyze enjoyment, he's enjoying, and there is no enjoyment in the material world. There's only separatism. The separatism is there. If we connect to him, then we can enjoy. He enjoys through us, actually. In his lila, all the devotees, in one sense, Krishna is enjoying through all his devotees. He's enjoying his devotees. And they're immediately taken out of this place. It's not possible to enjoy the sweet taste of straw for a human. This is great straw. Of course, Jayananda once ate a coconut tree to see if it might be edible. But he decided it wasn't. So certain things just have no taste in them. You can't relish it, you know. You can chew grass in the summer, you know, some of the grass has a nice little taste in it, you know. But you've got to be a cow or a horse to enjoy chewing dry grass. Okay, someone will say, no, there's actually a taste in there. Yes, in all this material enjoyment, there's actually a little bit of enjoyment there. It is very, very small. It's called chapalasuka, and it vanishes just like that. While you're enjoying it, yesterday someone sent us some sweets. It was prasadam, but they were sweets. And some of them were really rich. So after the second one, I couldn't have eaten a third one. They were so rich. It's not you could just keep eating sweets and just, at a point say, that's enough. In this world, enjoyment, even where it can be found, it's very limited. Short-lived, limited, and many times accompanied by a hurricane of suffering immediately after. A wave of suffering accompanies material enjoyment. Why is that? Because we live in the land of the laws of physics, karma. For every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. You borrow from the bank, you have to pay back with interest. Reactionary activities are here. In the spiritual world, there are no reactionary activities. Nothing bears the reaction other than more. More of the same, more enjoyment, more pleasure, more satisfaction, more love, increasing. How beautiful is the Supreme Lord? He is infinitely beautiful. How beautiful is Radharani? She is infinitely beautiful. And there's a, to give you an idea how that works, I think it's Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, maybe another. He says that both Radha and Krishna are supremely beautiful. And seeing, I forget which one he starts with, but seeing the beauty of Radharani, this enhances Krishna's beauty. Then Radharani seeing the beauty of Krishna that is enhanced, this enhances her beauty. Again, seeing the enhanced beauty of Radharani, Krishna's beauty is enhanced. You see, it's like a couple together. Singular, they have their beauty, but together they complement each other. Why don't we just wear, you know, when you dress in secular clothes, just, you know, red sweater, red socks, red legs, red shoes, you know, red bows, red hats, red cars. It's like, ah! There's some variety because it complements. And it's noted that the boys, they don't have a dress. They wear always the wrong colors. So they end up wearing grays most of the time. Grays and browns. Because when they get into colors, until they get over 50, you see all these guys walking around with red pants when they're 50 and long stuff like that. Yellow, green. Compliment. Couples compliment. The supreme couple compliments each other. So their beauty is always increasing. No one can answer how beautiful they are without bringing in the conception of infinitely so. Infinitely beautiful. And all their characteristics are like that. Infinitely kind, infinitely gracious, infinitely charming, infinitely beautiful, infinitely sweet, infinitely affectionate, infinitely giving. All these things infinitely. And here, it's all finite, 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 finite. It's just limited. Limited, 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 limited. This really, when they call these companies such and such limited, they're absolutely true. They should call this the material world limited. It's all limited. And our life is the most limited. It's so short, even the human form of life. Trees live longer than humans, many of them. Most of them, actually. Most of these trees, well, not in this forest, we're going to trim it, but most trees outlive us humans. 100 years, 200 years for a tree is quite ordinary, provided someone doesn't cut it down. But the natural life is there. Very limited place. You cannot call this the, you understand the point? You cannot call this the place of enjoying, where God is happy to see you enjoy. Because you just analyze, you're not enjoying that much. You get, at a point, you can like enjoy a little bit. What, like, what's Friday night? You know, in the material concept, it's only part of one day. All day Friday, you worked. And then part of Friday evening, they kind of like do something to enjoy. Well, we don't have to work in the spiritual world. There is no what we call hard labor. Full of activity. Maybe even building houses is there. Many activities. Milking cows is there. Many. That's hard work in this world. Wow. Nanda Kishore is going to get an electric milking machine with 50 cows. There's no way he can manage 50 cows milking twice a day. You see? Well, even milking a cow is hard work here. But there, nothing is hard work. There's no energy limitation. There is no work. There is only, it is said, every word is a song, every step, every movement is a dance. All work becomes a dance. It is an opposite world. So the enjoyment theory won't hold up. Won't hold up. People used to ask us, and you're young, it doesn't settle in. And then at a point, I don't know, I guess different people, different times. For me, I was quite older. I realized the question was, do you think there'll ever be a world war? Do you think there'll ever be a World War III? Because I was born just after World War II. You've heard about it. You've seen films. So when I was growing up, it was like, you know, it was just there, just before we were born. So every kids used to. And then I realized much later on, the world's always at war. There hasn't been a day of peace since it began. And if you get into the history books, you'll find out, I mean, deep into the college level of history, there's war. Always. It's just after the World War I, there was some other fighting. Then it was World War II. After that was the Korean War. After that was the Vietnam War. After that was the Nicaraguan War. Now this goes on and on and on. Now it's a war against terrorism. That takes the headlines. But there's so many wars. There's a war going on in the Philippines. War, 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 war. And in some of these wars, millions of people. In Russia in World War II, 2 million people were killed. And that's a lot of people. So, from so many angles of vision, this material world is not created as a place for enjoyment. It is enjoying only in the eyes of those who don't have a clear understanding of reality. Those who have the clear reality understanding, they may transcend this world and enter reality, the real reality. Sometimes even devotees have twisted this around. Well, you know, the reality is. No, the reality is that devotional service, your japa, worshiping the deity and offering food to Krishna, this is all that exists. Everything else is a fleeting illusion. Everything. And even devotees lost that after a while, and they would start to say, well, you know, the reality is of family, or the reality is of work. Those aren't realities. Those are not realities. They're not even realities in this world. Where's yesterday's work? It doesn't exist. There's only some paper in exchange for it. You don't stop working. You have to do that. The working devotees have to work. Mahaprabhu assigned different service to different devotees. And one of them was the working devotees. I forget the devotees, but he told some to worship the deity, some to chant the holy name, some to study the scripture, and some to work and support the other devotees.
So in a household, one person works, four or five people get to do devotion, learn, be children, grow up. The household gets to help the temple, and if it's looked at in relation to that, then sometimes it takes that pounding edge off the work. You know? At the same time, in the temple, what happens? Devotees forget that service is service. They even do this thing that even washing the pots is something like work. Who's going to do this? It's just like, but when you offer them a sweet ball, they don't argue out. You know, well, you should take it. I took it last time. Prasada they take first. But other things sometimes in devotees in big temples, then they try to get out of that because they just forget. It's not work. It's service to Krishna. It is not work. If you want to call it work, then call it the labor of love. It is not like work. And work for a Vaishnava should also be seen like that. It's the source of of support for service. And whatever wealth we get, we should utilize that for Krishna. Given healthy, prosperous life, that is given to the devotees. Don't have to put yourself in poverty. You should have a prosperous life of sufficient food, clothing, shelter, and all the things that surround that. That is laudable, and that is accepted to work for that. But one should not just go on trying to increase that. We're richer. Throw away all our old sweaters. We can buy more expensive ones now. We can upgrade and just throw away our, used cars and just buy all new ones and just upgrade materially. That is a misuse of material wealth. You're not going to work today?